This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
From MPB Think Radio, this is Money Talks. Kevin Farrell here with Ryder Taft, Portfolio Manager at New Perspectives. Ryder is a chartered financial analyst and holds the Certificate in Investment Performance Measurement from the CFA Institute. Many Americans will emerge from this spring's Safer at Home order in a worse financial situation than when it started. Do you have late fees on bills? Are you getting collection calls? Do you need the assistance of a credit counselor? What does the service look like and what tips can they share with us? Our guest is Bruce McClary from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. We're also looking for your personal finance questions. Contact us by email. Send it to money@mpbonline.org. Good morning, Ryder. Hope you're doing well this morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
One bit of financial news that producer Liz Gill and I heard this morning on Marketplace, and that is the deadline for providing information to the IRS, if they don't already have it, to get direct deposit, the stimulus money, is tomorrow at 11 a.m. So that, I think, is mainly if people paid in and the IRS did not have a bank account for them to get the direct deposit. Those folks have until tomorrow at 11 to provide that information to the IRS.
Yes, that's correct. Hang on, I'm getting a little bit of echo there. So that's correct, and you know, we've talked about that a lot on the show. I know that's been of a lot of interest to folks, especially those who have had trouble getting theirs. The IRS does have, you know, they were a little slow to get some of these tools out, but you can go to their website, irs.gov/coronavirus. That's where they've kind of compiling all the information there. You can check the status of your payment. You can you can update your banking information if you're one of those folks who hadn't filed or had not provided banking information in the last couple of years. So hopefully a lot of those people who are having trouble early on have been able to get their information updated, have been able to check the status, or hopefully have received their money, because a lot of that has already gone out. Although they said the people who are receiving it by paper check, so that's if you're not providing your information by that deadline. If you're receiving it by a paper check, it could take much longer for you to get it.
Also, you have some information on a change on the deadline for filing state income taxes.
Yes. So initially, the state income taxes, they only delayed it a month. They delayed it to May 15th, but they have delayed it until July 15th to match up with the federal income tax. So if you owe state income taxes, then you don't have to. You don't in the state of Mississippi. And a lot of states have done this. You know, they delayed it some, but now they want to match up with that IRS deadline. That's going to cut down on a lot of confusion. It's going to cut down on a lot of panicked deadlines in the next few days. You will have until the federal deadline to get that paid.
Also, other financial news. Did the monthly jobs report come out last week? And if it did, I can't imagine it was too rosy.
No, not too rosy. So what we have, and you know, we've been getting them a lot and we talk about it a lot, is unemployment numbers, because they, you know, you get that number every week, just how many people have filed for unemployment. Of course, that's been a huge, huge mess in a lot of places. So, you know, we don't really know how accurate that number is, but what we're seeing, what we get every month, is kind of a more detailed report. How many people are unemployed and still looking for work? What, you know, it breaks it down by sectors and everything. And what we've seen, you know, a total of about 33 million people have applied for unemployment benefits in the past. It's been about 2 months now, 7 weeks. And it was about 3.2 million filing last week, which is, you know, if we remember that week where there was, you know, 5 or 6 million folks filing for unemployment, it's coming down. People are working through the system. And again, this wasn't a thing where people all got laid off all at once, because it was all at once. You know, businesses were slowing and shutting down.
This is Money Talks on MPB Think Radio. We'll bring our guest, Bruce McClary, into the conversation in just a moment. But first, we have a caller on the line, so we say good morning to Lois calling in from Quitman. Good morning, Lois. Go ahead, please.
Yes. I'm asking a question if people on Social Security are going to get another stimulus check.
Right? Yes. If you are, if you meet the eligibility guidelines, which I believe, I don't have that pulled up right now, but it's if you make under $75,000 a year adjusted gross income, then you are eligible for the full amount. If you make less than $100,000 a year, you are eligible for some benefit. As long as you are not somebody's dependent is another one of the rules. And that's about it. You have to be a U.S. citizen, I believe. And if you are receiving Social Security, we have, you know, as far as we know, the detail is that they will use the payment information that Social Security has on file to send that money to you. If they have not yet already.
Lois was asking about a second check, and that's yet to be determined if there will be another round.
Oh, a second check. Oh, well, yes. I don't know. They're only talking about a second check right now. I don't know the status of that. That is the status is politicians are saying things to get themselves in USA Today. That's the status of that right now.
All right, Lois, thanks for your call. Yes, so the first checks have gone out, but still no definitive answer on whether there will be another round of stimulus checks, a similar CARES bill. We'll have to wait and see what Congress and the administration do about that. Our guest today is Bruce McClary from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. Bruce was a guest with us in 2018, so if you want to go back and listen to that show in our archives, it's the July 3rd, 2018 show. So, Bruce, thanks for joining us again. If you would start out by reminding us about the mission and purpose of the National Foundation for Credit Counseling.
Thanks for having me on the show again. It's great to be here, and especially at a time when so many people need vital information about their credit and their mortgage and where they can get help. The National Foundation for Credit Counseling is a nonprofit organization. It's been around since 1951, and members of the NFCC serve all 50 states and all U.S. territories, and they provide financial counseling to individuals who are seeking help with just basic answers on budgeting, or if they need direct assistance in working out repayment arrangements with their credit card debt, working out arrangements to prevent foreclosure, and also to discuss affordable repayment options for student loan debt and other types of debt. So it's really a resource to help people improve their financial well-being through the services offered by the nonprofit member agencies of NFCC.
Bruce will be with us throughout the hour, so if you need more information about the National Foundation for Credit Counseling for yourself or for someone else, you can give us a call and talk to Bruce. We do have another caller on the line, so let's go ahead and say good morning to Harry, who's called in from Vidalia, Louisiana. Harry, you're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Thank you. With the virus closing, my business has got us in a financial bind, and we're up in years. And I'm wondering if a reverse mortgage would be something that we should consider. We owe nothing on our house. And if a reverse mortgage would be something we should consider, why or why not?
Bruce, if you don't mind taking a crack at that, and then we'll let Ryder speak to it.
Yeah, that's, you know, if you qualify for a reverse mortgage, if you're of an age where you qualify and if you are a property owner and you have enough equity in your home, as it sounds like you do, because you said you don't owe any mortgage on your home and you own it free and clear. A reverse mortgage could be an option to consider to tap into the equity of your home, but you have to be comfortable with the terms and conditions of a reverse mortgage and all the fees that come along with reverse mortgages, too, because reverse mortgages in some cases are known for being a costlier borrowing option than possibly some other types, even though you don't have to make monthly payments on the debt that you borrow. If you're comfortable with the loan being repaid when you leave the home. So it could be an option to tap into to available resources through the equity of your home without having the obligation to make monthly payments during a time when you need the money. But I think it's worthwhile to look at all the details of those offers to make sure that you're comfortable with those terms. And if you don't plan on making those payments, to be comfortable with the fact that you may not be able to transfer your property property entirely to your heirs if you pass on, or if you move, that the proceeds of the loan will be paid through the sale of the home.
Ryder, I know Nancy's not a big fan of reverse mortgage. Why don't you weigh in on this?
No, we're not usually big fans of reverse mortgages. Like Bruce alluded to, they often have higher interest rates or higher fees. They're a little more complex than the products that you're used to, just a normal mortgage or just a home equity line of credit. I would talk with, chat with a bank first to see what financing options you might have. You did mention you're a business owner. While the first round of PPP money has been exhausted, I'm not sure what the status of the second round of funds are. There may be other SBA type loans that are available. There are several other avenues that I would consider before going the reverse mortgage route. Like Bruce mentioned, it depends partly on your age, because partly the idea of a reverse mortgage is you're basically selling it before you die, and the bank takes it when you die. And so that kind of conceptually there, it's a lot different from just taking out a loan, borrowing money to tide your business over. So just consider that carefully. It doesn't seem like the most appropriate thing. It would be more of a last ditch effort to get some cash going.
And I would just want to add, I would add a couple of points here. The National Foundation for Credit Counseling at nfcc.org offers two services that might be helpful to you at this point. One is reverse mortgage counseling. The NFCC and its member agencies are approved they're approved to offer reverse mortgage counseling for home equity conversion mortgages. So that's that gives you an opportunity to talk to somebody about your specific circumstance and to learn a little bit more about how reverse mortgage may or may not apply as a solution. And the other service is small business owner financial coaching, which is available through NFCC member agencies at nfcc.org. So they can talk to you a little bit more specifically about how some of those options may apply to your small business situation where you may be able to find relief.
All right, Harry, thanks for your call. We'll continue our discussion of credit counseling and relief from debt after the break with our expert from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. We can also take your personal finance questions. So where can you get more information from the NFCC? We'll have that information for you next. You're listening to Money Talks on MPB Think Radio.
Professor Richard Gershon from the University of Mississippi School of Law, host of In Legal Terms. If you're enjoying this podcast, I encourage you to listen to In Legal Terms, the show about you and your rights. We find interesting legal topics to bring to you and let you know how the law affects you. Find In Legal Terms on any podcasting platform on your smart device or on our website, inlegalterms.mpbonline.org.
Information presented on Money Talks is meant to provide general information about the topics discussed and is not necessarily the opinion of Mississippi Public Broadcasting. The information presented does not create any type of relationship between the hosts and guests and the listening audience. Please consult a financial advisor or any other qualified professional for guidance about your personal finance questions.
Listening to Money Talks. Our website, moneytalks.mpbonline.org, is one way to hear past Money Talks broadcasts. You can also download the MPB Public Media app and listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand. Kevin Farrell here with Ryder Taft, Portfolio Manager at New Perspectives. This hour, we're visiting with Bruce McClary from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. So, Bruce, I understand that you've gotten into the podcasting biz. If you would, tell us about the NFCC's FinBit.
Yeah, we just started up a podcast. It's available on Spotify and iTunes. It's called FinBit, F-I-N-B-I-T, and it's exactly what it sounds. It's a little bit of financial information packaged into about 10 or 15 minutes. So it's really quick. It's easy to listen to. The guests that we have on the podcast are people who are directly connected with lenders, the credit bureau, and others who can inform you about some of the options that you have right now for a little bit of relief and can provide tips on how to get by through these difficult times. So we're really excited. In fact, Wednesday is the podcast that features Rod Griffin from Experian, one of the big three credit bureaus, to talk about what the credit bureaus are doing right now for people during the COVID-19 financial crisis.
Also, you do have a website. It's nfcc.org. If you could give us a couple of articles that are currently on there to give us an idea of the variety of information that can be found there.
Yeah, we try to maintain the website up to date as possible, and we've got a lot of COVID-related information right now for people. For example, things that renters can do in response to financial hardship. Does it make sense right now to declare bankruptcy, or are there other options that people should consider in front of them? What people should be concerned about in terms of debt collectors and debt collection during this time? And, of course, what options are available to find relief from payments that might be required on mortgages and student loans and credit card debt during these times. So all that information is available at nfcc.org. We also have a special website dedicated specifically to COVID-19. It's our COVID-19 financial toolkit. And we have a series of live webcasts on our Facebook page every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Where we take live Q&A and we talk about some of the issues that are up on our website that we're addressing through these blogs.
Let's follow up on one of those areas that you mentioned, Bruce, and that is mortgages. Are there some proactive steps that owners can take before they're late on mortgage payments?
Yeah, and it's, you know, obviously difficult times for a lot of people, a lot of homeowners. And as a part of the CARES Act, there was some relief that was included in that for people with federally insured mortgages. But there's also relief available for others that don't have federally insured mortgages. But the one thing that I would tell people is that when money is not a resource, communication is. And you should be proactive, and you should be reaching out, and you should be getting answers to your questions, and you should be especially talking to your mortgage servicer or your lender about what options are available. And just to kind of give a brief overview of what's available through the CARES Act, first, your lender or loan servicer can't foreclose on you right now. There's a 60-day moratorium on foreclosures for federally insured mortgages, and it started on March 18th. So we're still in that window. So that's the one benefit that you automatically have if you have a federally backed mortgage, and that's FHA, that's VA, that's USDA, Freddie and Fannie. If you're curious about whether or not your mortgage is federally backed, call the number on your mortgage bill and find out. Ask questions about the type of loan. The second provision in the CARES Act gives people the ability to request a forbearance on their mortgage for up to 180 days and the opportunity to request a 180-day extension after that. So that's a tremendous benefit for people who are struggling and don't know where the money is going to come from to make those mortgage payments. And that's another option. But you don't automatically plug into those programs. So don't just go ahead and skip a payment and think, oh, I'm protected. You need to communicate, and you need to make a phone call, and you need to talk to your mortgage lender. And if you have questions before you make that call, that's where talking to a housing counselor with a nonprofit credit counseling agency and a housing counseling agency like the ones that are available through nfcc.org, that can help you prep for that conversation. It's like a dress rehearsal. How many times a day do you talk to your mortgage lender? Probably hardly ever. So it's not automatically a conversation people feel prepared for or comfortable having. So why not have a practice call? Talk to a housing counselor, have your questions answered, know what to ask for before you reach out and before you talk to the lender or the servicer. That's my advice as far as that goes, because it helps you find a solution much faster and a solution that's more appropriate for your situation.
So you mentioned the term forbearance. Is that sort of like hitting the pause button on your mortgage payments?
Yeah, it gives you an opportunity to either miss a payment or have a significantly reduced payment. And while skipping a payment, you're not penalized for doing so. So in other words, they don't report those skipped payments as missed payments that send your account further into delinquency and trigger collection activity or foreclosure activity. So it allows you to keep your account in the status where it is before you entered into the program without falling further behind because you're missing payments. And during that time, interest and fees, don't continue to accrue on those payments. And then at the end of the forbearance, you have options for affordably working those skipped payments back into your mortgage loan, especially with the federally backed mortgages, where you can either work those payments into to have them repaid in addition to your regular payment over a series of months, or roll them to the back end of the loan. So it's a really good opportunity for people to get a break on their payments without fearing the penalty of missing a payment and falling into delinquency and risking foreclosure.
What about refinancing a mortgage? And I would like to get, Bruce, your thoughts on that, and also then bring Ryder back into the conversation with some thoughts about refinancing mortgages.
Yeah, rates right now, they're pretty good for certain types of mortgages. And if you shop competitively and you have good credit, and if you qualify for those really low rates, it's tempting to think about refinancing. Also, if your mortgage balance is at a point where you've paid it down and you have a little bit of room in your equity there, the timing may be right. But you also have to think about the circumstances too. What do things look like in terms of your ability to maintain or manage the mortgage that you're rolling into? Is there other debt that you're thinking about rolling into a new mortgage? Are you going to use part of it to pay off credit card debt? Are you going to try to get like a cash out refi to do some of that? So, I think a lot of it depends on what you're going to use it for, but it certainly is a time right now where rates are attractive. And if people want to get a break on their mortgage payment, they're looking for lower interest rates. If they qualify, might be a time to think about that. But you really need to be in a position financially where it makes sense. And if you're struggling and you're scraping right now and you have no income at all, you refi may not be an option that you can use right now.
Ryder,
I think that's a really good point there. With a refi, you have to know why you're doing it. Is it just that, my mortgage rate is 4.5% and my broker told me I can get, 3.25% or 3% interest rate and save, $2,000 every year. Maybe you still have a large balance, even bringing down the interest rate just a little bit, it's going to save a significant amount of money. That's one reason to do it. Another reason is, maybe you just want to drastically lower your payment. You've been paying for a long time. You had a 30-year mortgage. You've got 15, 20 years left on it. If you want to refinance to a 30-year, just to lower that payment a ton, because maybe you have drastically reduced income, and extending it makes sense. Extending it if you can afford to pay a higher payment does not necessarily make sense. And then additionally, like you said, do you want to do a cash out refinance? Do you have other high interest debt and a good bit of equity, and does a cash out refinance make sense? Bearing in mind that a cash out refinance, generally a higher interest rate, just a little addition on top of what the main rates are. But like he said, with interest rates as they are, it does make it a very attractive option. Mortgages are, if you still have income, it's generally fairly easy to get as long as you have a house. And so that can make sense for those, but you have to think about what is the purpose of it, and is it going is a refinance going to accomplish what I'm looking for?
Yeah, and I would add too that a lot of situations right now that people are facing in terms of hardship, financial hardship, You know, as hard as it seems for people to imagine this, these are temporary situations, and in some cases, they're not long term. So there are temporary solutions that are out there that don't involve borrowing more money, or like with the cash out refinance, and getting deeper into debt. So think about those options first if you have a temporary hardship situation. But if you're, you know, you're still earning income and you're doing fine, and you're just looking for ways to save and maybe pay down a little bit of debt, high interest credit card debt as well, it, you know, could be an option.
We'll continue our discussion of financial guidance during the coronavirus pandemic in just a bit. You're listening to Money Talks on MPB Think Radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jimmy Stewart, professor of internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. On the original Southern Remedy, we answer questions about all aspects of your health and share some of the latest medical information in the news. You can listen to the show on Wednesdays at 11 on MPB Think Radio, or you can subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy on your preferred podcasting app.
Money Talks is MPB Think Radio's personal finance broadcast. Kevin Farrell here with Ryder Tapp, portfolio manager at New Perspectives. Ryder is a chartered financial analyst and also holds the Certificate in Investment Performance Measurement from the CFA Institute. We're pleased that Bruce McClary from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling is able to take some time for us during today's show to answer some questions and give us some information as well. We have an email here. Ryder, you might be able to help us out with this one. It says, I received a stimulus check for my mother who passed away in 2018. Am I supposed to keep the check or send it back to the Treasury?
Ooh, you are supposed to send that back. Yeah, this happens. You know, obviously some people have died, you know, since they filed their last tax return or whatever. But yes, that is money that you should return. I have seen a bit on this, but I do not have with me there's a procedure for returning to make sure they know where that goes. But no, that is not for you.
And I would imagine IRS.gov might have some details on how to go ahead and return that back so that they know what the situation is.
Probably yes. I always fall back to IRS.gov. As complicated as they are to understand, sometimes they are the ultimate resource for that sort of information because they are the ones who make the rules.
All right. Let's head back to the phone lines. Earlier in the show, we had a question about a reverse mortgage. I think Catherine is on the line with a comment about reverse mortgages. Go ahead, Catherine. You're on the air with us.
Hi. Good morning. Listen, I just wanted to correct you about your statement that the bank takes your house when you do a reverse mortgage. That's not true. When a person leaves their home, whether they've moved or passed on, their heirs have 6 months to a year, depending on what state they live on, to sell the home and take whatever equity is left. I just, you know, people are afraid of reverse mortgages, and they're just another financial tool that if they're used correctly, you know, it's just a tool. It's not good or bad. It just has to be right. You know, and the house needs to be somewhere where the people can stay the rest of their life, you know, and appropriate to age in place. And the last thing I want to encourage you both to do is to go to the AAG website. They have seminars for financial planners. And I highly encourage you to listen to them because it's got really good information about how to counsel people on how to use a reverse mortgage, when it's appropriate and when it's not. But blanket statements just add fear, and I don't think that's really helpful to seniors who are really going to be in a pinch as they age because everyone is living longer.
All right, Catherine, thanks for that call. This is Money Talks on MPB Think Radio. We'll stay on the phone lines here for just a moment and invite Lorraine from Laurel. Good morning, Lorraine. You're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Good morning. I just had a question, and this might not be appropriate to what y'all are speaking on, but my husband has two accounts in MetLife, and one of them's an IRA, and then the other one is where he can just borrow from it. And he is going to be 64. Is there something that did we need to take that money out, or did they need to let us know, or what do we do with that money, or will it be retaxed?
So when you're talking about the IRA and having to take money out, usually folks are talking about required minimum distributions. Does that sound like what you're talking about?
Well, see, you know, it's been in there for years, and no one has ever said, you know, we just hear people say, you better get that money out of there. They're going to tax it. So, you know, we really, we get a little interest check, you know, in the bank account. But, you know, it has accumulated through the years. And but we were just wondering, do we need to get it out?
Not necessarily. So what it sounds like is you said one was an IRA, and how the IRA works is when you put money in, you save money on taxes. And eventually, when he turns 72, he will be required to start taking money out of that. And when you take money out of an IRA, you pay taxes on it like it's income. There's no, you know, I mean, there are some things you can do to kind of avoid paying those taxes. But particularly if you're working or particularly if you don't need the money, then it's not a bad thing to leave it in there. Yes, you'll pay taxes on it later, but we pay taxes on income. That's how it works. With the other account, I'm not 100% sure what type of account that is or how the tax situation works on it. Yeah. If they're sending you an interest check, you said every year, then maybe you have to pay tax on that interest. Maybe you're not paying tax on what accumulates in the account. I'm not sure there. But the taxation on that, you're going to have to speak with somebody maybe at MetLife if you have an advisor who set that up for you who can help you understand those taxes a little better. But that money, it sounds like it is available for you if you need money, if you need to withdraw money, if you just need to replace some regular income. But you will likely have to pay some tax on it. I just don't know exactly how the tax situation that account's going to work.
But you don't think they'll completely take it away from us?
Generally speaking, no. They're not just going to take your money away. Not many people do that these days except bank robbers. And one thing it may be that they have it – you said it's MetLife. It may be an annuity where y'all have already decided some time at which they will annuitize it, but that means that they would start sending it to you. They wouldn't just take it away from you.
Well, see, that other one, I really don't know what it is, but I know that at different times he's had to call and see if we could get it, and it, you know, it wasn't a big deal, but we didn't ever have to transfer it. Something else came up. But, okay, that's all that I needed. I really love y'all's show. I listen to everything. I go all day long.
Oh, thank you for listening.
So I do appreciate it, and I know that might not have been what y'all were talking about today, but I missed you the other day, and so I said, well, I'll just give it a shot.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Call in time.
Okay. Well, y'all have a great day, and be safe.
All right. Hey, Lorraine, just anytime you have a personal finance question, even if it's not the topic that we're talking about on a specific day, go ahead and give us a call. That's why we're on the air here for you to answer questions like that so that you can rest assured that you're doing the right thing with your finances. Bruce, before we leave our discussion on mortgages and housing related things, you know, during times of crisis and that kind of thing, people, scammers come out, and it's something that we always need to be on the lookout for. Are there some housing relief opportunities that homeowners might need to think about and some potential red flags there?
Yeah, I think people should be careful about the same kind of foreclosure rescue scams that were popping up during the housing crisis, 2009, 2010. People are out there fishing, and honestly, they're all fishing for the same thing. No matter what the scam is, they're using the same playbook, and they're looking for your personal financial information, personal identifying information. They want to get their hands on your money directly. So just be careful about offers that sound too good to be true. And if you're worried about foreclosure in the long term, if you have questions about temporary relief with your mortgages, you know, if you get an email direct solicitation from someone with a link, just don't click on it right away. Do some checking up on the offer, and always know that there are nonprofit organizations out there that offer housing counseling that are a resource to you as well. And these are HUD approved organizations. You can go to HUD.gov to find out who's approved for housing counseling and who's not, or you can go straight to NFCC.org. All of our member agencies that offer housing housing counseling or HUD approved, and you can get some advice on what the legitimate resources are and what your options are instead of falling victim to some of these scams. I mean, a lot of these people are calling directly on the phone. They're sending unsolicited emails. A lot of them are targeting seniors, which is very unfortunate. So it just it's good to know where the legitimate resources are. And if you look for a HUD-approved housing counseling agency, you can get the kind of trusted advice that you're looking for.
And one thing I would add to that is that when someone is coming talking to you about, say, your mortgage, you know, your first resource is going to be your current mortgage servicer. When somebody is coming and talking to you about, various financing options, your first resource is going to be, your bank or your credit card, who is already offering you that financing and can give you, the real answers. If someone is coming to you talking about an IRS program or your taxes, your first resource is the IRS. If someone is talking about the Social Security, your first resource is the Social Security Administration. You don't need, especially if somebody, like you said, is calling you unsolicited with some, this great information, yeah, this thing you must act on, like, just check with the person who actually knows first.
Yeah. Don't assume the person that you're speaking with or communicating with, the one that reached out to you first, is actually who they say they are. Yeah.
That's a good point.
We'll continue talking about credit counseling and take your personal finance questions after this last break. You're listening to Money Talks on MPB Think Radio.
Walker, the Lady Auto Mechanic, host of AutoCorrect. If you're enjoying this podcast, try my podcast, AutoCorrect. We help steer you in the right direction with your car problems. Find me on any podcast platform or at autocorrect.mpbonline.org.
Glad you found our show, Money Talks, on MPB Think Radio. Kevin Farrell here with Ryder Taft, Portfolio Manager at New Perspectives. This hour, pleased to have Bruce McClary from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling as our guest. He's been on the show before. He was our guest on Money Talks on July 3rd, 2018. So if you want, you can go back and listen to that as a podcast or find it on our website, moneytalks.mpbonline.org. We've got another caller on the line, so we say good morning to, this time it's Tim in Cleveland. Go ahead, Tim. You're on the air with us.
Yes, my wife has an IRA with a bank, and they informed her, sent her a letter saying that she's able to get those monies from that IRA without penalty. However, they mentioned that she would need to prove to them that she was having a true hardship due to the COVID-19 situation. So is that the case? Is that the situation where you have to prove it, or can you access those monies due to the time period we're in?
It sounds like so she is under 59 and a half, I guess, because once you're over 59 and a half, you can take money out of an IRA without penalty. Of course, you have to pay taxes on it. When you take money out of a traditional IRA, you pay taxes like it's income because you save money on taxes when you put it in. There are a number of kind of exemptions from that, 10% penalty tax that you have from withdrawals if you're under 59 and a half. And one of them right now is you can take out up to $100,000 of an IRA and you say it is related to, COVID hardships. I don't know what all the requirements are. I think, banks may have some discretion on what they consider. And you can pay that back over time. But that is, they can take out up to $100,000 without that 10% penalty.
Well, they mentioned to her that she would have to prove it to them that there was related to the COVID situation.
Did they say how she would prove it? Some of these things, and I haven't seen specifically, what all the requirements, for different institutions are. Sometimes these requirements are simply you have to attest to them. You have to certify to them that you have been affected by COVID. And that's pretty much it. It's not a producing documents sort of issue. So has she, is this a situation where she needs to take money out of her IRA?
They sent her the information saying that it's available and she would like to get it.
Well, I mean, if I could see those documents, I might be able to answer your question, but I'm not really sure. Here's the thing. She can withdraw money from her IRA, period. That's allowed. The issue is that if you withdraw early, then you have a 10% tax penalty, and that's paid to the IRS. And most institutions will do that withholding for you. And so it's perhaps what they're talking about is just their requirements so that they will not do that withholding is it. But generally that penalty is between you and the IRS.
Right. Well, again, they were saying that in order to avoid the penalty, she would have to prove that it was related to the COVID situation. And we were just simply wondering, how would you go about proving that? We're having, some of the same, similar hardships as other people, maybe not as bad, but, we were still wondering how would that work?
That's a great question.
Ryder, would this be a case where it would just follow up with whoever they have the IRA with? I mean, we talked about going back to the source. Is this a case where that might be the time to do that?
It would be requirements of that bank. So, I don't know. Again, I don't know if their requirement is I need you to produce your past 3 years of pay stubs and show me that your most recent pay stub does not match. I don't know if it's just you need to sign a form that says my income has been reduced, or even just check a box that says I have been affected. Again, the requirements of the specific institution, I can't really speak to that. But what the 10% penalty is a thing between you and the IRS, not necessarily the bank. So, without knowing that institution, seeing that paperwork, talking to them about it, I don't know that I can answer that question specifically for you.
All right, Tim, thanks for the call. Let's say maybe go back and contact the bank to try to get some more information, some more clarity on what exactly they're offering in that case. We're visiting today with Bruce McClary from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. Bruce, another area, I guess, where people might be concerned with the uncertain financial situation that COVID has brought about is credit card debt. Any thoughts or things about that people that should be aware of when it comes to their credit card debt?
Yeah, right now there a lot of people are feeling the pressure of repaying their credit card debt, and credit card interest rates right now are not low. If you look at the averages, they're at historically high levels. So people are paying a lot more for carrying that debt. So it puts a lot of extra pressure on people's budget, and that's one of the first places people look for relief. There are programs that are available that are offered by most of the major credit card issuers that are allowing people to defer payments, monthly payments. It's very similar to a mortgage forbearance, where credit card issuers are allowing people a period of time, 60, even 90 days in some cases, where they can go without having to make payments on their credit cards. And during that period of time, the accounts won't fall further behind. Interest won't accrue on the unpaid on the payments that have been skipped. And then they can just resume normal payments at the end of that period. And these are programs where people can call up and they can ask to be plugged in. Again, communicating with the credit card company is the key here, because you can't just wake up one morning and say, I'm just going to miss my payments and the program will automatically start. That's not the case. But one thing that I would mention is that the National Foundation for Credit Counseling at nfcc.org is offering assistance for people who are thinking about that. Where if you have multiple credit card accounts, you're not sure what they're offering, you can talk to a credit counselor for free, no cost, and they can help guide you through what the options are, what the conversations need to look like with your creditors, and assist you through that process with your credit card companies, because those should be the arrangements that you make right away if you experience a reduction of income or if you lose your job entirely during this crisis. And if you know that your savings will not get you as far as you need it to go, when you're short of money, communication is the tool. And since these programs are being offered, taking advantage of these programs that give you the ability to defer your payments helps you use the available resources that you do have in terms of your money for other purposes, like, you know, medical care or putting food on the table. So this helps you make better use of the cash that you have when you can plug into these skip a payment programs.
Bruce, we've got about 2 minutes left. One other thing I wanted to touch on. You know, recently there have been a number of instances over the past several years of people's financial information being breached. What does credit monitoring that a lot of places are offering, what does that do for a person?
Well, credit monitoring helps you keep track of the activity that's being reported to your credit bureau. And it's not just about the payments and it's not just about the accounts that you owe. It shows you who's looking at your credit report, when that's taking place, if any information on your credit report is being changed. So you can look for unusual activity that might be a red flag and indicate that, hey, there's somebody trying to steal my ID or who's trying to use an account that I already have open to buy things for themselves. So you can sort of monitor that and keep an eye on it. Now, paying for a credit monitoring service is one option, but now, because of the COVID-19 crisis, the three major credit reporting agencies, TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian, have made credit reports available for free on a weekly basis. If people go to annualcreditreport.com, which is the website set up by the big three, they can get a free weekly credit report, a tri-merge report, until next April. So every week, you can monitor your own credit for free and see what's being reported on all the three major credit reporting agencies. So that's sort of a new development.
You know, I know that I am a AAA member, and I know that they've got some. I think they partner with Experian, and they've got some free credit monitoring that I've taken advantage of recently. 30 seconds left. Bruce, a quick definition of credit freeze.
Yeah, that's something that you can do where you can lock down access to your credit report so that people can't see all of your account information, can't pull a credit report and look at who you owe and which accounts you have. You can freeze it and unfreeze it as you like. And that's one way to help reduce the chances of credit fraud and ID theft. But I will make this very clear. It is not a 100% guarantee that you will not be a victim of either. But it certainly helps improve your chances.
All right, that's going to wrap us up for today. Money Talks is a production of MPB Think Radio, funded in part by the generous financial support from our listeners. To hear today's show or previous show, visit moneytalks.mpbonline.org or listen to the podcast by searching for Money Talks on your favorite podcasting app. Our show is produced by Liz Gill. So for Ryder Taff and our guest Bruce McClary from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, I'm Kevin Farrell, inviting you to join us every Tuesday at 9 for Money Talks on MPB Think Radio.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.